Paul Ekman shifted our focus to how the brain learns negative behavior. The first time one acts in a seriously cruel fashion may be the most difficult. But if you continue to act in a cruel fashion, you are in all likelihood changing your brain in such a way that cruelty now becomes your temperament. And cruelty becomes your way without thought or reservation. How can we respond to lead that person away from the cruelty? It depends on the context, the Dalai Lama pointed out. In any specific situation, there is a question whether you really have the ability to do anything or not. If you think there is a possibility, then the first option to consider is peaceful means, theoretically speaking. You would use reason or try other gentle measures to persuade the person not to engage in the cruel act. Clearly, I'm putting on the Buddhist hat again. There are four modes of enlightened activity that are laid out sequentially for a bodhisattva. The first option is pacifying, where you try to calm the situation with words, with reason, with comfort. If that doesn't work, the second option is a slightly stronger mode, causing expansion or increase by giving the person something. You give them a gift. You give them something that will calm the waters. It could even be giving knowledge, or it could be giving something tangible to rectify the situation, to solve the problem. Where that's not possible, then you go on to the third option, which is domination or power. You use your greater power to subdue the person, the country, or whatever it may be. There are some situations where even that won't work, and then the final option is ferocity or wrath. Even violence is a possibility. So, with wrathful compassion, there can be violence. Theoretically speaking, violence can be permissible if it's done out of compassion. Your Holiness, is it harder to be cruel to someone who emanates loving kindness? Paul wanted to know. Generally speaking, yes, the Dalai Lama replied. I very often quote a statement from A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life to the effect that generosity is much easier to cultivate than tolerance or forbearance. Richie Davidson cited data suggesting that there might be at least some hope for helping seemingly impossible cases, such as criminal psychopaths. It's been found that if they are trained to pause, to develop patience, they begin to pay more attention to the cues of the possible negative consequences, and they actually show improvement. With criminals who are in jail, this improvement can happen over a fairly short period of time. Mathieu went back to Paul's query about how best to relate to a cruel person. You need two hands to clap. If someone is not at all in the mood for conflict, it is much more difficult to get in a fight with that person. We find many stories of meditators and hermits in Tibet who encountered bandits. When the bandits suddenly come into the presence of someone who is very serene, with loving composure, their attitude and initial intention completely subside, just like pouring cold water on boiling water. Jeannie Tsai turned the question back to Paul. From your work, is there any evidence to suggest that certain facial expressions or body postures are disarming to people who are behaving in aggressive ways? After reflecting for some moments, Paul concluded there was no direct evidence for this. It appears that people who act cruelly aren't moved by signs of suffering or fear. They depersonalize. People whose job it is to be cruel report that they don't respond to the other person's pain. I said, I think that the teaching of empathy very early in life is extremely important in this general curriculum we're talking about, if only as an inoculation against human cruelty later in life.